He's singing about the sweet life. It's Janet Pascal. We heard two from Jim Cole. What's in a name, he asks. And from Twyla Paris, we bow down. Good morning to you. 10 minutes after the hour. It's a Monday. That means Dr. Don. And we welcome Dr. Don Clark from the far reaches of Garden Valley, Texas. Don, good morning to you.
Well, good morning, Jim. And good morning, Dave and Heike. How is everyone?
Heike's with us here. Doing fine.
Good, Don. How about you?
Doing well, thank you.
Okay, good.
We cracked 70 degrees on Saturday. Just a gorgeous day here. There's still snow piled up, but it's going fast. It's starting to look a little sick around the edges. But there's more. That's all right. Fear not. If you're from Minnesota, there's more snow in the forecast this week.
No.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
Is there really?
Well, it will be too warm to stick. It'll just show up in the air and then disappear.
Is that right? What forecast are you talking about?
An echo of winter here.
I think you need a new meteorologist.
Yeah, I think so. I think there are fewer meteorologists now. They're TV personalities, but they all go to the same place for their forecasts, and nobody makes up their own forecast for their local place anymore.
They don't have their own equipment, huh?
Yeah, no, it's getting cheap, and it's all in the personality now. Yeah. And it's the weather girls and the weather guys that dramatize the weather, tease across it, so you'll wait with bated breath for the forecast after this next set of commercials, and then they'll come in and hit you with, it sounds so dramatic, and all it is a little bit of light rain, you know, or something. So
snow is forecast for next Thursday.
Yeah. Yeah.
The 9th.
Yeah. Well, see, this is Minnesota.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, it was almost 90 degrees here yesterday.
Oh, that makes
me feel so much better.
How do you live at 90 degrees?
No, thank you. Thank you very much.
Why, Dr. Don, I'll bet your area is just lined with solar panels soaking up that sun and making use of that high efficiency of energy collection system, isn't it? Do you see solar panels down there on houses?
Not too much, actually. We do have a lot of sun, that's for sure. We've had a lot of sun this past week. We've had, obviously, some overcast and cloudy weather, too. Mm-hmm. But we don't get as much sun, let's say, like Arizona and, some places a little further out west.
Well, you're East Texas, but I tend to think of the whole state of Texas as having ample sunshine and warm temperatures. Maybe that's off just a little bit.
Yeah, we're more, we've got weather that is closer to Louisiana because we're only about 90 miles from Louisiana.
Oh, okay.
So we get a mixture. It's not, I mean, it's hilly and there's a lot of trees here and vegetation grows kind of wild. So, during this time of year, we get to a lot of moisture and sometimes it can be quite overcast.
Well, the subject this morning is solar energy, and just want to introduce Don a little more thoroughly to those of you who might be listening for the first time. Dr. Don Clark is a member of the board of Creation Moments, their website, creationmoments.com. He's a biochemist, and we delight in what Don brings us in the way of a scientific viewpoint when it comes to matters of faith, when it comes to things like creation and evolution and that sort of thing. So we tend to pick up scientific topics here and dissect them. And this one is a little disturbing to me because I've always been a big fan of solar energy. We're looking at an article over here at realclearpolicy.com that Don alerted us to. And it talks about the manufacturing process, not solar energy per se, but the industry that makes solar panels. Don, what have we learned from this article? And it's a little disturbing.
Well, solar panels are basically silicon chips, large silicon chips. And so you have the whole manufacturing process of a silicon chip. So in silicon, it's not just, you know, sand, basically, mm-hmm. or purified silicon. You have to have purified silicon in order to make, these type of devices. But then you dope it with various rare earth, minerals.
Rare earth metals, yeah.
And in particular, you know, so.
When you say dope it, you mean you mix it with?
Oh, you just put a little bit. For example, when you, the first process in making these solar panels is you take silicone, pure silicone, and you mix in a little bit of boron. And that gives the the chip that layer at least a charge to it. And then further, after you've actually grown the grown the silicone crystal, which can, by the way, be usually 2 feet long. So
really
these are huge, huge crystals. More than, let's say, 6 inches in diameter and more than, mm-hmm. a little more than 2 feet long. Then they slice up the kit, the crystals, and they make wafers out of them. And then they take the wafers and further process them, etch them, come back at high temperatures with atomized other metals to lay on top of it. So you're creating, in essence, a negative-positive charge junction.
Well, it's kind of a sandwich of wafers then. And we're talking about the solar energy that generates electricity then, right? Because you can use solar heat, but we're talking specifically about electrical generation by solar radiation, aren't we?
Yes, that's correct.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Now, solar heating is a totally different process.
Mm-hmm.
These are what we're discussing is the chips, actually, the big solar panels that you see on people's houses,
mm-hmm.
not the panels that have black tubes running through them to collect the heat from the sun directly.
Mm-hmm.
But these are the panels, the electrical panels that the chips themselves generate electricity from, from sunlight, basically. And then that electricity is sent through, hundreds of wires, basically, to collect from each panel. And then you can have enough power, basically, to charge, to run your home.
So each one is kind of like a battery. You can put them in parallel or in series and generate various voltages and amperages or wattages and get the desired outcome by linking these panels together. I'm looking at a photograph on this article. Which is in Monterey, California. And there are hundreds of them laid out on a large area of land. And I've seen other solar electrical generating plants around the world. It seems to be catching on in some areas, but how come we never see them here? Do you have to be in the desert maybe, wide open spaces with lots of sunshine to make this practical?
Well, the panels are fairly expensive themselves, and so you need for them to be, more efficient. Obviously, the more sun you have, the more mm-hmm. Electricity you're going to generate.
That makes sense.
And the panels are not batteries themselves. Actually, you've got to connect them up to batteries to charge batteries so that you have reserve electricity.
That's true, because a battery is a storage device. I mean, it stores electricity. It doesn't produce it. It stores it. So I see the distinction. Yeah, thanks.
Yeah. And so, you're not going to have these solar panels all over the United States because if you're living in an area that's overcast, most of the day
mm-hmm.
or most of the year, then it makes no sense. It'd make little sense to put up solar panels, let's mm-hmm. say, in Seattle, Washington, where it is overcast most of the time. But in the desert, in California, the Central Valleys, like I said, Arizona, some of the western southern states, maybe, even in Florida, and in parts of Texas for sure, it would make sense. And it would probably make sense if you could find them cheap enough.
I want to read just a short paragraph from the article. It says that although harvesting energy from the sun is a noble idea, and I've always respected the idea of solar energy, solar technology is costly, inefficient, unreliable, which I didn't know, and shockingly dirty. The more we learn about solar panels, the more we should appreciate the reliable energy sources we already have. Now, this article seems to be discouraging the use, or at least the manufacture, of solar panels. Tell us about some of the byproducts, the side effects of manufacturing of solar panels.
Well, the first process is to get the rare earths that are used in the manufacture of the panels out of the earth. And that is a very caustic and toxic process. You generate tons and tons of basically toxic waste from just trying to extract these rare earth metals. Then once you have the metals, then you have to manufacture the panels. And, I mean, you have to manufacture the silicone, you know, the chips, basically, mm-hmm. silicone wafers. And as I was saying before, in the doping process, or in the, they, you essentially lay down like a molecular layer of some of these metals, and it really becomes, what do you do with the waste from that process? Because when you go to clean up the chips, then you have these solvents, but they're contaminated with these rare earth and heavy metals that you have to then dispose of.
So a challenge similar to the use of nuclear energy, then, with undesirable waste products, you have to either store or somehow disperse or neutralize.
Right, and you can't neutralize these because they're metals, basically. Mm-hmm. And so you're winding up storing them somewhere. And oftentimes, it's not uncommon for the storage facilities to be, thousands of miles away from where the manufacturing plant is. Mm-hmm. Basically, Silicon Valley has the same problem. I mean, if you're making silicon chips, you've got the same problem of getting rid of these rare earth type of metals.
Well, you mentioned rare earth. Now, these are just elements that not everybody's acquainted with. I mean, sometimes they have common names, and sometimes they're really exotic things. I understand that much of it is mined in China. And in fact, the competition for being a source for rare earth metals is really heating up worldwide, because so much of it is used in all the cell phones and computers and laptops and various little screens that we carry around. This really goes far beyond solar energy, doesn't it?
Oh, yes, it does. I mean, if China wanted to hurt us really badly, mm-hmm. they would stop, you know, selling these rare earth metals that they have that they've mined. Now, mm-hmm. we have tons of stores of, well, at least I should say tons of stores, at least in the ground, mm-hmm. of these rare earth metals ourselves. But we have chosen as a government and as a country not to mine them, because the mining process is so toxic. And so the regulations are so onerous that people have stopped mining them in this country. Mm-hmm. And so you have a country like China, for example, who is continuing to mine them, and they don't have the same regulatory requirements and restrictions that we have, and they've got plenty of people, and so they are mining it and making the money off of the mining that they do, and so they're pretty much setting the price for these metals, and unless we want to start mining them again, they can set that price to whatever they want. Mm-hmm. And the demand around the world is just increasing because there's more and more electronics being used, more and more cell phones, more and more computers being used around the globe. So, you know, unless somebody else steps up to the plate, or there's a new technology in, let's say, silicone or digital devices that comes up that doesn't use these toxic products.
You know, so often we think of pollution as something we cause, like with car exhaust or with like wood smoke, and we look at our cell phone and say, this is a clean little device, energy efficient, does wonderful things for me, and yet it's in the manufacture of all these conveniences that we encounter a problem. And in this case with solar energy, the article goes on to talk about how few solar manufacturing facilities are cooperating with authorities and with somebody called the Silicon Valley Toxics Coalition, which apparently is very concerned about I'm blanking out. I hate it when that happens. pollution in the Silicon Valley itself.
Right, and this is supposed to be a voluntary. It is a voluntary organization. It's a voluntary organization of the solar panel manufacturing companies, mm-hmm. and they're supposed to report how much waste they produce, and most of them aren't even participating, and those that are participating, like 10%, are not reporting any waste.
Mm-hmm.
And it's any toxic waste that is, which is impossible.
What so, here? No, well, not
don't
here.
You just
no,
love the government, Don. Don't you just love the government?
Yeah, I don't know what they're doing with the waste, but.
Well, I gotta ask Heike here. Heike, you're kind of involved with the home small farming and self sufficiency kind of lifestyle. You do a lot of things. Do you find people that do what you do are using solar energy, or is it not a factor?
No one I know personally is. I've known a few people who have had a solar panel on their home, but it was a homemade one.
Mm-hmm.
Out of beer cans.
Oh, okay. Well, that would just collect the heat, though. That wouldn't generate electricity, right?
Right. But being in Minnesota and having winter, 7 months out of the year? Is that where we're at?
8 months, yeah.
And that's obviously an entirely different animal than what we're talking about this morning. But that's kind of just a fun little hobby that I've known a few people to do, is to build their own little heat solar panels, which, you know, they work and they don't work. Depends on if it's an overcast day in January versus a hot sunny day in July, and and you can't store that heat. Mm-hmm. All you're doing is, you know, it's kind of smoke and mirrors a little bit.
Yeah.
So entirely different animal than what we're talking about this morning. But I like you, Jim, I support the idea of clean solar energy because, gosh, I mean, the sun is there, it's free. If we can harness it without polluting the world, wouldn't that be a great thing? I'm gravely disappointed to read this article and find out that the opposite is happening.
Well, you know, my thought process with solar energy has never gone beyond the presumed efficiency and economy of solar energy. Like, it's a clean source. I never thought about the plants that manufacture solar devices as being a liability and a danger, but apparently that's it.
We've been sold the positive aspects of green energy for the last 30 years, and I use the word sold very specifically. We've been legislated, we've been indoctrinated, people have been beating on our chests and our foreheads for at least the last 30 years on what wonderful things are going to come about because we become green. In my little dalliance in politics, that subject came up over and over and over again. It was almost like it's like a religion, very much like a religion. And yeah, we've been sold the aspects of this and the positive things of it. Why wouldn't we start to believe
it? It's an easy sell. We're charged with being stewards, taking care of the earth, and we'd like to do it. It's just that leaves us open to abuse and being taken advantage of at the same time. Now, and there are those out there
Now, you're not telling me that Santa Claus is dead, are you?
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't do that.
How about the Easter Bunny?
No, the Easter Bunny's doing fine. Yeah. Although, wait a minute. We had the neighbor's dog got the Easter Bunny this year, I'm afraid.
Yeah, okay. Yep. See, there you go.
He's gone. Yep.
Now, these are fictions that we've been handed for a long time because somebody has been benefiting from them, even if it's a good feel-good feeling that I'm doing something to protect the Earth. Mm-hmm. We just had Earth Day a couple of weeks ago, and so the kidlets are in school being indoctrinated with this PAP as well.
Mm-hmm.
They're still getting this nonsense, and they're ignoring Was it last year, the year before, cash for clunkers?
And for the old cars.
Old cars off the road, old efficient cars that had already expended all of their energy costs from mining and manufacturing and all the rest of it, and replaced them with brand new cars that had all kinds of brand new energy costs that hadn't even been tabulated.
Mm-hmm.
And the way around that is, well, let's not talk about that. Yeah. Let's just leave that part out of the equation. Let's continue on.
Is the answer then to being good stewards mainly in terms of using less energy? I mean, saving and not
I think you're going to have
wasting?
To define what you think about as being a good steward of the earth.
Yeah.
Now, it's very possible we're going to have to go back to horses. But then you're going to be hip deep in horse manure along the sides of the road, and somebody's going to say, I don't think that's very stewardly of you leaving all that horse poo laying around the road. And think of all the methane increase. Somebody is gaining from this. If somebody is telling you how to live, somebody is telling you how to conduct your life and how you conduct your beliefs, I doubt that they their motives are clean.
Dr. Don, you raise grapes.
Interesting use of the word, huh? I'm sorry, Don. Yeah. Are you still here?
Yes.
Get off your horse, David. Get off your horse, okay. Don.
Obviously, there is a political. This is my job.
Aspect to all of this. But solar, once you have the panels made, it is a relatively clean source of energy, with the exception that, like I said before, you need batteries, and you need not just one battery, like a big car battery or a boat battery. You need a bank of batteries to store the energy, overnight, or else you pump your excess energy into the power grid. So even the running of the solar panels themselves, isn't as clean as they would have you believe. Now, if you think about this, solar is really the best form, one of the best forms of energy, and we have tons of stored solar energy in our Earth, in the form of, for example, in our country, we have natural gas. We have tons of natural gas that we can mine, and that's a natural gas came from, ultimately came from the sun with interactions with plants and decaying.
Kind of a built-in manufacturing process, yeah.
As well as oil. Okay, well, oil can pollute the environment if you are pumping millions and millions of gallons and it spills into the water and gets the Gulf Coast all dirty. Mm-hmm. And so there can be some side effects there. But strangely enough, the Earth has already provided ways of cleaning that up in the terms of microbes that eat oil droplets, for example. And the things that we do to mitigate some of the spills that we've done actually makes the toxicity worse. For example, during this the oil spill in the Gulf a couple of years ago, they were putting dispersants, basically detergents, in the water to disperse the oil. Well, those dispersants were toxic and not innocuous of themselves. And the oil would have settled out a lot sooner hadn't we put the dispersants in there. Mm-hmm. And the microbes would have chewed them up, and that would have been the end of the story. But man has this way of interfering with natural processes, because oil's been leaking out of the ground for for a long time in various places, oil and tar, and we get these this idea that's a dirty form of energy. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, natural gas is pretty darn clean. That's one of the points of the article, that they were saying we've got all these natural resources that we don't have to be going down this expensive route of this toxic route, which we don't they conveniently not calculate the expense of producing these things.
Yeah, the article says here that according to California state records, the solar panel manufacturers in that state, in California, have produced nearly 50 million pounds of toxic sludge over the past 5 years. Also, contaminated water is being produced, and it says the waste has to be transported by truck to rail and rail to toxic waste dumps, sometimes thousands of miles away. And this is salient here. Disposing the waste created by one solar panel burns as much energy as that panel can generate in 3 months.
I think we found a little cottage industry for East Dakota. We could start a toxic waste dump.
I think
there's a crying need for that. Just have to figure out, we got to find some place that nobody's living.
Yeah, we're on the lookout for income sources for East Dakota, and this could be one. Dr. Don may not be in the loop here, but Wednesday, Don, is Independence Day. We're declaring our independence from the state of Minnesota on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
Brand new state of East Dakota.
East Dakota.
Now, I've always assumed that I'm going to be the governor, but last week Jim hit me the idea that we're going to hold elections, and I said, Huh? What?
Well, why hold elections?
The first governor, need not be elected because there's only one candidate and one write-in possibility. So
yeah, there's only two voters.
Why go to all the expense of an election?
And how many residents are there of East Dakota?
Well, we haven't decided entirely on the borders yet. That's hard to calculate at this point. Our biggest worry is that as the state of East Dakota, what is the post office going to use for our abbreviation? For post offices, do you suppose?
And ED.
ED, yeah. Well, see, which could be frankly, a liability. Yeah.
Yeah, and frankly, we don't really care how
public
many
relations disaster.
Area. There's only two franchise voters.
Yeah, well, that's true.
You know,
well, Heike, now we talked about including Heike. Now she would be in the southern reaches of East Dakota.
She I could think be I was going to be the governor's press secretary or something
like that. Well, there'll be a place for you, I guarantee you. But being in the southern reaches, you would be our vacation destination.
Yeah, that's probably true. Does that mean she gets a vote?
Well, you know, I like this. You can build some tourism around my chicken farm because that's the new ecotourism trend is that you go to a farm and you live in the hayloft and you milk the cows and you feed the chickens and you pay to do this. And the farmer sits back and collects the money and drinks his coffee and doesn't do his own chores.
The Dude Ranch guys out in the West have been doing this for decades.
Yeah,
I know, but now it's starting to branch into my little
good
world.
Idea.
And we've talked about making East Dakota a virtual state, which means, by all logic, that Dr. Don and his vineyards could also be part of East Dakota if he would like.
Would you like to be the official winemaker?
Yes. The grape grower and the winemaker. There you go.
Yeah.
Right there.
Well, it could happen.
And please, Don, the voice of sanity.
Oh, that's my goodness.
We need
I think we've digressed.
slightly.
Well, listen, we will post our conversation with Dr. Don this morning on the website a little bit later under Audio Archives. We'll include a link to this article for those of you who are interested in catching up on this news. And maybe, and of course, within the article itself are links to other studies and publications that talk even more about it. So that'll be up, Bo, in a couple of hours at brokenroadradio.com. Dr. Don Clark, once again, a member of Creation Moments, creationmoments.com. Speaking of websites, is a place you can link to easily from ours. If you're listening on brokenroadradio.com this morning, it's just over on the right-hand side of the page. You'll discover that Creation Moments has a wealth of resources for your own personal study, for your churches, for your Bible studies and small group discussions. Blogs over there and DVDs and radio programs. And, of course, we air Ian Taylor's Creation Moments program several times a day here on Broken Road Radio. Dr. Don, always a delight. Appreciate having you along. And you've enlightened us once again.
Oh, well, thank you very much. And you all have a wonderful week.
Well, you do that. We will
you too, Don.
Look forward to the snow later this week in particular. Chris Rice resumes the music for us on the Broken Road Radio Monday. Good morning to you.